Hello, I'm Michelle Grattan, and this is the Conversations Politics podcast. The climate and energy wars within the coalition are once again on ugly display. With a meeting of government parties this week that saw a lot of pushback against the Finkel plan for a clean energy target. Malcolm Turnbull has multiple challenges in trying to craft an energy policy. Investors desperately need certainty, so a new policy must be set. But the Prime Minister has limited political capital in what has been for him in past times a lethal policy area on his own side of politics. A restive backbench has now already shown it's going to be a very difficult path to manage. To tease out some of the issues and the backbench questioning, we talk today with Energy Minister Josh Frydenberg and the Nationals backbencher George Christensen, who sits on a narrow margin in his Queensland regional seat of Dawson. Then we go to Labor's climate spokesman Mark Butler. Labor claims that it would like to be bipartisan on energy policy, but would it really? Josh Frydenberg, the government has only just got the Finkel report and there's no cabinet decision yet, a point you've stressed. But can you give me some rough timetable? When would you expect a policy to come? By spring? By Christmas? And when would you expect legislation?
Well, obviously these are very important issues, and as we've seen just in the last 24 hours, a number of my colleagues, Michelle, have a variety of opinions on how we should approach it. So it's only understandable that we do take our time. We don't rush this policy. The Cabinet does need to formally and fully consider the Finkel report, so we'll do that, and then ultimately we'll come back to the party room in due course. But there are a lot of discussions still to be had, and we need to ensure that we get the policy right in order to meet that trilemma of energy affordability, energy stability, as we transition to a lower emissions future.
So without trying to tie you down precisely, we probably won't see legislation till next year, right?
I don't want to get into the discussion about the hypothetical. We've just got the report. It's a very important report. It's a very comprehensive one, and we do need to consider it fully.
You're stressing consultation with the government parties, but what plans do you have for consultation with stakeholders more generally and indeed with the public?
Well, I'm talking to stakeholders all the time, and it's important to understand that Dr. Finkel's report was undertaken over an 8-month period with extensive international consultation and domestic consultation, including public hearings. And so there has been a lot of discussion over a long period of time, both by him and by me. Now, we've now got
Now we have a model, though. Before we had options, didn't we?
We do have a recommendation of a clean energy target. And I'd want to point out, Michelle, that's not his only recommendation across the report. He's got a lot of ideas around governance. He's also put forward this idea of a 3-year notice of closure period for large-scale generators, which in the party room a lot of people spoke in favour of, and also this idea that the intermittent sources of power, wind and solar, would be required to provide storage, battery backup, whether it's pumped hydro, whether it's gas, or indeed whether it's batteries themselves. This also received strong support in the party room. So let's just wait and see how it all plays out. But certainly the Finkel report has given us a lot to think about.
Now, on Tuesday night, after that rather character-forming party meeting, you didn't sound all that confident that you could actually land this clean energy target. Do you think you can win the argument?
Well, it's too early to say where the final position of the government will land because we do need to properly consider the assumptions of which the Finkel modelling was based. We do need to consider the other recommendations in the report. But what we do know, and the Prime Minister has stressed this, as have I, that we need to solve for the investment uncertainty in the system. The last coal-fired power station built in Australia was 2007. The last gas-fired power station built in Australia was 2010. We have seen a very rapid uptake of renewables, which has been encouraged by the government through the renewable energy target, to the point that we saw a 5-fold increase in 2016 on 2015 numbers when it comes to renewable energy. So we are seeing more generation come in, but we've also seen 9 coal-fired power stations close in the last 5 years. And what my focus is on, Michelle, is trying to drive down pressure on prices, which more supply can do, but also to get a more stable system, which more storage and planning can also assist with.
But you've got a double problem, haven't you? You've got the straight policy issue to try to deal with, and there are a lot of considerations there and differences of opinion and so on. But as with this issue always, the politics seem to get in the way, and the danger surely is that this is turning into an Abbott versus Turnbull contest. How do you somehow get rid of that?
I don't see it as a battle line, so to speak, between Tony Abbott and Malcolm Turnbull. Indeed, I know that the views of all my colleagues, be they the former Prime Minister Tony Abbott or other members of the backbench, are valued, and their ideas are deeply considered by ministers when put forward. We have to work together as a team to land this difficult policy area, and as you say, there are numerous objectives that we are seeking to meet. And that's why affordability, stability and the lower emissions we have established as our trilemma. You can't do one without considering the impact on the other. And the politics, as you know, in this building, Parliament House, have been pretty fraught over time. But the public do want this issue resolved. The business community do want this issue resolved. And I was heartened to see a broad cross-section of support in favour of the Finkel review from everyone from large manufacturers like BlueScope and BHP to and Rio Tinto to the Business Council of Australia, indeed to the Clean Energy Council of Australia. A lot of major stakeholders and employers came out supportive of the Finkel review as a way to achieve a breakthrough in this important area of energy policy.
I guess one of the frustrating things is that the quote facts unquote seem to continually change. Tony Abbott was saying today that the targets that Australia agreed to for Paris were aspirational targets, where I think we thought that they were much more binding than that. Can you clear up that question? Are they aspirational, or are we signed up with a blood pledge?
Well, we're certainly committed under Malcolm Turnbull to meeting our 2030 target of 26 to 28% by 2030 on 2005 levels. I do point out that we met our first Kyoto target. We're on track to beat our 2020 target by 224 million tonnes and indeed are endeavouring to beat our 2030 target. The electricity sector, Michelle, is about one third of the emissions across the Australian economy. The rest come from agriculture and industry and fugitive emissions and transport. So we've got a number of initiatives in a number of different areas. We've got the Emissions Reduction Fund, which is focused on the land sector, which has got 189 million tonnes of abatement at a cost of just $11.83 per tonne of abatement. We've got a policy that is now being discussed through discussion papers on vehicle emissions. We've also got our National Energy Productivity Plan, which is seeking to boost productivity by 40% by 2030 with new standards for appliances and the built environment. And of course, the renewable energy target has seen a major investment and in renewables and a much higher penetration of wind and solar. So putting all that together, we do feel confident and are certainly committed to meeting and beating our 2030 target.
So what you're saying is all the weight isn't on this scheme. It's spread over a number of measures.
Absolutely. This is a whole of economy, whole of government approach. And in order for the electricity sector to do its part, you need to have a policy setting which will ensure emissions reduction over time. The renewable energy target has done that. And of course, our focus, though, right now, is on reducing power prices and stabilising the system, because we can't afford to see a repeat of the September 2016 blackout in South Australia, which devastated so many businesses who were affected.
Now, there are various versions, some of them quite dramatic, of what came out of last night's meeting, or at least what went on in last night's meeting. Can you give us your version of how you thought the mood was and the balance of opinions?
Well, it was a very constructive meeting, nearly 3 hours in length. Earlier in the day, I had presented to the party room a slide show on what was happening in the energy market.
Very long slideshow.
What was happening with the wholesale prices, what makes up an energy bill, what we're seeing in the gas market, and of course, what were the major recommendations from Finkel. In the afternoon at the second part of the meeting, it was very constructive. It was good-natured. Colleagues made a lot of very insightful comments about what they were seeing on the ground. Many spoke from experience about cafe owners, heavy industry, manufacturers seeing a doubling of their electricity and gas prices, and indeed endangering the future of their businesses. And so it was a passionate, constructive, I think helpful conversation in which everybody came out of it saying we were better for it. There was no particular motion or policy put before the meeting for approval. In that sense, I think it does set us up well for the future.
So those reports of 20 people speaking against were wrong, you're saying?
Look, I don't want to go into the particular numbers. There were people who spoke strongly in favour, some who outlined their concerns, of course. But as I said just before, there was no specific recommendation or policy position put to the party room for approval.
Now, the Finkel report says that his model would bring the price of electricity down. And yet this is clearly based on a number of assumptions about future investment, which may end up being questionable, who knows. But isn't it a bit misleading to be forthright about this promise of falling prices?
Well, you can only take the modelling on face value.
But modelling's modelling.
Well, you could say that about any modelling for any review in any sector.
And you would, I think.
And the point is that Dr. Finkel believes that by solving for the uncertainty in the regulatory environment, you will get more investment, and more investment means more supply, and more supply ultimately means lower prices, and a 10% reduction for household bills and a 16% plus reduction for industrial customers, because of course the wholesale component of their bill is greater, is good news for those involved.
Now, just finally, it's quite clear that so-called clean coal is going to have to come into this scheme to keep the Nats happy and to keep your own backbench happy. But once you bring in coal, isn't there a risk that you really emasculate the whole clean energy target?
Look, I don't want to get into the specifics of baselines because for two reasons. First, this was a report to government, not a report by government, and it's an important distinction, and we will now properly consider in full the Finkel report. The second point, Michelle, is Dr. Finkel made it explicitly clear that he wasn't setting a specific baseline. He was leaving that to governments to settle. What he has put forward is a particular model and the reasons for it. It was his preferred option over a emissions intensity scheme, but it was just one of many recommendations he put forward in his report, which will now be carefully considered by the government.
Josh Frydenberg, thank you very much for talking with us. And as we know, there's a range of backbench opinion, and now we're going to hear from one backbencher who's very critical of the report and the prospects of the clean energy target, George Christensen. George Christensen, there have been various accounts of Tuesday's long party discussion on the Finkel report. Can you tell us how you read the mood at that meeting?
Well, I think accounts of this being this huge Barneyan blow-up are very much overstated. It was a very good discussion, a very respectful discussion, and I think a lot of people were singing off the same song sheet. The number one concern for just about every backbencher that spoke was about affordability. There certainly weren't too many people in the room, if anyone, in fact, that thinks that business as usual is going to cut the muster with the public out there. I mean, we need to do something because power prices are on the increase. The question really boiled down to whether the recommendations out of the Finkel review will lead to lower energy costs. And, you know, I personally doubt that. A lot of others in the party room doubt it. And the rationale behind that doubt is that Finkel himself ascribes the lower power costs, the $90 cheaper that he envisages it could be, because of greater investor certainty. Well, you know, knowing the history of climate policy in this place, there is no way that we are going to have policy certainty and therefore investor certainty, and therefore the plan won't lead to lower power prices.
Even if it stops power prices going up, though, wouldn't that be a plus?
Well, it would be, but again, that's all predicated on the fact that there's going to be investor certainty. If we set up the framework for, you know, out of this Finkel review, that we had a clean energy target, we set it at a particular level. Well, just like with Gonski, we've done a deal on Gonski. We've done what David Gonski wanted, but Labor have out-Gonskied us on Gonski. They will out-Finkel us on Finkel. They will come up with a lower or a higher clean energy target than what we have set, and therefore there will be no stability. There will be no policy stability or certainty, and investors will know this. They'll instinctively know it, so they won't be, you know, just because we set something in place now, they won't be going, wow, this is going to be around for the next 30 years. We've got the capability to go and invest and do what we want to do. They'll know that Labor's going to go one step better. All of the left-wing groups and green groups are already out there criticising the Finkel review, saying that it should have been more, and Labor will ultimately go in that direction.
But doesn't this leave you in no man's land? You're saying that people think things can't go on as they are, and yet you're saying also that the Finkel alternative isn't an answer. So what is the answer?
Well, the answer is being bold and doing stuff that people wouldn't expect of governments per se, let alone a coalition government. And I think intervention in the market has got to happen. I think that we should be looking at the Australian Energy Regulator and beefing that up, giving it some serious teeth, removing the right of appeal to that, actually limiting the profits that particularly state-owned energy generators, such as we have in Queensland, that state governments can siphon out of those to prop up their bottom line. We should also, I mean, quite frankly, we invest a lot of money, a lot of taxpayer dollars in renewable energy. Why can't we invest this in clean coal technology? Why can't we invest federal taxpayer dollars in a new high-intensity, low-emissions coal-fired power station?
You're from the Nationals. Could you be accused of some agrarian socialism here?
Oh, I'm proudly wear that term as an agrarian socialist. There's nothing wrong with it as far as I'm concerned. You know, the fact is that we can't be free market purists all the time. The world doesn't work like that. Government is part of the economy. The public expect government to have a role in the economy, to right the wrongs and balance out imbalances. And what we've got at the moment is no one wanting to invest in cheap, affordable baseload power. And why? Because of politics. Because there's been so much uncertainty around this for so long. So we're not going to have the investment in affordable baseload power from the private sector. Why not have it from the government sector?
Now, while you're taking this radical line, your leader, Barnaby Joyce, has been quite supportive, basically, of the Finkel plan. Are you surprised by this?
Well, no, I'm not. I'm not necessarily saying that we shouldn't have a clean energy target. I'm concerned about whether it would drive up power prices or not. If it does, then I'm not in favour of it. I haven't seen that modelling. I've seen some work in the Finkel report, which, quite frankly, others have said is a bit deficient in terms of the modelling. I think there needs to be some independent modelling to see what it will do in terms of power prices. If it's driving it up, not in favour. If it doesn't do anything with the power prices or brings it down, then I'm in favour. But I've got to see that data. I haven't seen it yet.
Do you think in the end Malcolm Turnbull is going to get some form of clean energy target through? Is he going to land this? And how important is that for his prime ministership?
Well, look, I think that people are ascribing far too much to this around Malcolm Turnbull's leadership than what it warrants, actually. But it'll come down to that ultimate question. We are all acutely aware from our electorates, from businesses, from householders, from industry, that power prices is the number one issue. And they don't care, you know, that it's private sector or it might be state government controlled. They want government at all levels to do something about this hit to their bottom line, this hit to their hip pocket that they have to suffer, you know, every 3 months when the bill turns up. So we need to do something. We need to be bold. And I think affordability is going to be the issue, not clean energy targets. So there is a massive opportunity, a massive, massive opportunity to actually regain the support of the public, to take the high political ground by framing the entire next election around affordable power prices, about bringing back cheap energy to this country. Labor won't do it. Labor won't do it because they're wedded to these outlandish renewable energy targets. We can do it if we set our mind to it and we make a goal and we do things outside the box.
Do you think that the targets need to be recalibrated in some fashion, even though we're actually signed up to them internationally?
Well, what I would say, and it's been publicly reported, that I did express disappointment at one fact that, you know, and I won't go into names, but I've got to say that I was told, along with every other member of the Liberal and National Coalition team, that we would not have to do anything further to meet our Paris Agreement targets. And now we're being told something different, that we might have to do more. I don't want to do anything extra that's going to drive power prices up or that's going to cost jobs and hurt industry. There is no point in Australia, which produces far less than 2% of the overall world's carbon dioxide emissions, in trying to be, you know, the head of the pack. We can't be the lion when we're actually a field mouse. That's the reality here. And other countries like the US have now pulled out. India and China, they've got get out of jail clauses in their agreements in terms of Paris. You know, there's no point in us hurting ourselves and our economy and jobs simply to meet an international agreement.
So are you saying that we should follow Donald Trump and walk out of Paris?
I'm saying that the Paris Agreement's a non-binding agreement where there's no penalties that apply. And, you know, if we don't get to the target that we're that we've signed up to, by virtue of the fact that if we did try to meet it, we'd actually hurt the economy and cause job losses, I would prefer not to meet the target.
You'd say leave the whole agreement?
Well, I don't know that we're going to leave
it. Not meet the target, but
if it was me, I'd leave the agreement. If it was my decision, I'd leave the agreement. But it's not my decision. The government's view, the Prime Minister's view, Foreign Minister's view is that you know, we stick with it. All I'm saying is that we should not sacrifice jobs or drive up power prices because we are a signatory to the Paris Agreement.
As a member in a quite marginal electorate, do you feel vulnerable on this issue of power prices in the coming election, whenever that is?
Well, look, I don't feel vulnerable on it, but it's just a simple fact here that the public are getting angry at all levels of government for what they see as inertia on the things that matter to them most. Now, you know, to be quite blunt about it, state government should be in the firing line, because in Queensland, at least the state government owns the energy companies, but they're not doing anything about it. So they're not doing anything about it because they can rip major dividends out of their government-owned corporations in this field and prop up their bottom lines with it so they can promise goodies to get re-elected. So it's really going to come to the federal government, I think, to take a lead on this. But if we are going to take a lead on it, we need to grab it by both hands and actually bring down power prices. The mechanism to do that, I don't know exactly, but there's greater minds than me in places like the Productivity Commission and other agencies we have at our disposal that could come up with greater measures. But as I said, a starting point, I think, would be looking at beefing up the Australian Energy Regulator, and Josh Frydenberg, as the Environment Minister, is already talking about that, removing appeal rights state government corporations and private companies have against the AER, and then also looking at seriously investing, maybe even owning, a Heeley ultra-supercritical coal-fired power station.
George Christensen, thank you very much for talking with us.
Thanks, Michelle.
Mark Butler, the ALP says it wants bipartisanship on this energy issue, but really, wouldn't that deprive you of an election issue on a ground that is good for Labor?
Well, I guess the reason we've taken the constructive position we have over the last several weeks, and particularly since the release of the Finkel report, is that we've heard an overwhelming message from business groups, from unions, from ACOS and environment groups, that really the country needs a level of bipartisanship to break the energy policy impasse. All we've seen is security go down, prices go up very dramatically, wholesale power prices have doubled over the last few years, and the key driver, according to everyone, is energy policy uncertainty.
So do you think that there'll be a backlash against either side which doesn't come to the party with a policy that's able to be implemented and reaches agreement with the other side?
I think that's right. I think there's a danger that if the Parliament is not able to come up with something that's credible, that reflects the Finkel report, then really the Parliament will be marked down substantially. Obviously, there'll be some differentiation drawn between parties depending on the reasons for the negotiations breaking down. But I think across the country, the community, the business community, they want the National Parliament to come together and put the national interest first.
Labor's flagged that it would be willing to embrace a clean energy target even though it's not its first choice. But what are the qualifications on that embrace?
Well, we have done that, and as I've said before, we took an emissions intensity scheme as a very clear election policy. We had a 43-page climate change and energy policy, and I don't think the government had an energy policy at the last election. We did, and so it's no small thing for us to put aside a policy we took to the electorate only last year. But we are willing to do that because it's apparent that Malcolm Turnbull is not going to be willing to, able to negotiate over any other model than a clean energy target. Now, if that's the only game in town, then we think our responsibility is to do the best we possibly can to make that work. And we think, having read through Alan Finkel's report or his panel's report over the last few days, we can make that target work, provided, you know, there's more design work to do, obviously, but provided it's consistent with the principles that underpin the report.
But coal is obviously a deal maker or breaker, isn't it? What's the position there of Labor?
Well, you can't rig the definition of clean energy to include coal. I mean, it begs the question, if new coal-fired power stations are clean energy, what's not clean energy? Really, it's a ridiculous proposition that would make a nonsense and a mockery of the broad report. I mean, it's quite clear from the chief scientist, Alan Finkel's view, that he would be, in his words, I think, surprised if incentives were created through this report for new coal-fired power stations. And the modelling that underpins the report doesn't incorporate any sort of a threshold that would allow new coal to come into the system with incentives. Now, obviously, there's no barrier under a clean energy target for someone building new coal-fired power stations. The question is whether you'd actually get certificates and incentive money to do that. Now, if you're going to do that on the basis of a clean energy target, I think to include new coal would just be a nonsense.
So this comes down to where you set the baseline, doesn't it? And what you're saying is that you must be happy that the baseline is tough enough.
That's right. The threshold, or the definition of clean energy. I mean, everyone within the or under the baseline or within the definition of clean energy will get certificates in proportion to their level of cleanliness, if you like. The idea that new coal-fired power would be incentivized, actually get money from consumers to build new coal-fired power under the rubric of clean energy, I think is a nonsense.
Doesn't this mean, though, really, that we might as well say at the start of this argument, well, bipartisanship is not going to be possible because we know that Malcolm Turnbull is going to have to include so-called clean coal?
Well, we don't know that. We don't know that yet. And if we're going to have a sensible if we're going to have a sensible discussion about the Finkel report, let's talk about the Finkel report, not the Finkel report with some ridiculous addition that is added to appease the hard right wing of the Liberal Party. This is the problem we've had for the last 10 years, a small rump within the coalition holding the nation back from delivering bipartisan policy. We can't have that happen again.
Labor's had an ambitious renewable target. If there was an agreement on the Finkel report or Finkel model, would Labor's policy at the election be to be more ambitious, in other words, to have Finkel Mark II?
We'll talk through those questions with stakeholders. Obviously, we've got clear policies around the targets to reduce emissions that are required to be consistent with our Paris Agreement. Every commentator, every expert who has looked at Tony Abbott's targets, which Malcolm Turnbull adopted and which underpin the Finkel report, they all agree that they are fundamentally inconsistent with the commitment in the Paris Agreement to keep global warming well below 2 degrees. So, I mean, the point that Alan Finkel has made is that this report is scalable. I mean, in due course, frankly, whoever is in government, there will be pressure on Australia and on all countries to increase their level of ambition. The ratchet mechanism process under the UN starts next year, and there will be pressure to increase those targets. So, you know, the whole point of this mechanism, whether it's an emissions intensity scheme or a clean energy target, is to have a durable mechanism that can be scaled up over time. And I think that's its really core design feature. As to the level of renewable energy that might be in place in 2030, even Alan Finkel's modelling of a clean energy target with a very low emissions reduction target sees there being substantially more than 40% renewable energy.
But not as high as yours.
Well, it's not quite target. 50%, but then there's other modelling around that, particularly from ARENA, for example, a government agency, or from the CSIRO, that all say that rooftop solar on households and on small businesses and nursing homes and the like will be much, much higher than Alan Finkel's assumption as well. So I think actually once you look back in 2029 and 2030, 50% renewable energy will have been a relatively easy ask because the costs are coming down so fast.
Well, just talking about the Finkel modelling, do you believe the conclusion out of that modelling that power prices would fall under his plan?
Well, the conclusion is that power prices are lower than the business as usual position. And I think everyone agrees with that. I mean, there's been lots of modelling done of these different models, you know, emissions intensity schemes, low emissions targets over the last several months by the Climate Change Authority, the Energy Markets Commission and many others besides. And they all show that if you have a good policy mechanism in place that gives investors the certainty to spend money on new electricity generation, it will start to put power prices down. I mean, the biggest driver of wholesale power prices doubling under this government, according to the industry, is the policy uncertainty. Once you break that, you really do start to see some power price relief. And what we also see in the Finkel report and all of those other reports is that renewable energy is increasingly the most cost-effective new form of electricity.
But if you look back on this debate and what's happened over the years, just from the consumer's point of view, people were told under Labor that high power prices were driven in part by too much emphasis on poles and wires. Then Tony Abbott told them that the getting rid of the carbon tax would fix power prices. Now we have another story. Wouldn't people be justified to feel fairly sceptical about this argument about power prices? Isn't it a case of containing the rise rather than having some magical solution?
Well, that's right. I mean, power prices will rise over the period between now and 2030 as the price of pretty much everything will rise. It's a question of what the scale of that increase is, and keeping them to something close to inflation, which has been Australia's historical experience.
No real rise, you're saying.
Yeah, so no real rise. So, you know, getting back to the experience that households and businesses were used to for most of the post-war period, and what we have seen over the last decade is very big increases, mainly through the poles and wires investment that you talked about in the early part of that 10-year period. More recently, because of the wholesale power price increases through policy uncertainty, the gas price or the gas market getting out of control. Look, there's no one silver bullet to any of this, but the key challenge is to put in place a long-term, flexible policy framework that gives investors the certainty to start putting money on the table again.
When you move around the community talking about this issue, what do you find is the weighting in people's minds? Are they talking to you mostly about power prices? Are they talking particularly about emissions control? Are they engaged in the climate change debate? Where are their priorities?
Well, I think the story at the moment is power prices. You know, power prices are going to go up substantially over the next couple of weeks in most jurisdictions. AGL, the biggest retailer in the country, certainly the biggest retailer in New South Wales, is lifting power prices by 16% on July 1. You know, in Victoria, there'll probably be the second increase this year. I mean, these are very big increases. Businesses are getting even larger increases quoted to them. So power prices is the story right now. That doesn't mean, though, that the community isn't still focused on the challenge of climate change. You know, we're seeing the Great Barrier Reef, our most important environmental icon, go through its second major bleaching event in 12 months. You know, people are seeing climate change emerge as a reality around them today and recognise that we have a generational responsibility to take some action. Now, fortunately, because of incredible technology advances in renewable energy and more recently in storage, we can deal with both. But we just need a policy framework that allows us to let that investment start flowing again, get jobs into that industry again, and you will start to see power price relief.
Mark Butler, we'll continue this conversation fairly soon because you have a new book coming out. So until then, thank you very much for talking with us.
Thanks, Michelle.